Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 7th day of May, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And well, you know what, folks? It's another one of those days when the question is, how do we start off with the World War III update? And it seems to be getting hotter by the minute, or the satanically laughable state of what now passes for the U.S. legal system. Hey, I know. How about this story, which kind of sets the tone for everything else? Turns out that the invasion isn't limited to the non-existent southern border. It's also affected what was once called universities and colleges and schools of higher education. Yeah, what a sick joke. No surprise, they're openly calling for communism and Sharia law. These are folks that, for the most part, didn't even know what fascism is, but now they are one. Under the heading of mostly peaceful beheadings, this is the latest. From one of the centers of socialist indoctrination, George Washington University in the swamp. What do you bet he'd be upset too, and not just because they want to behead his statue as well? At what is called the George Washington University sick Gaza Solidarity Encampment today, the protesters held what they called a People's Tribunal, where they put the president of the university, Ellen Granberg, provost Christopher Bracey, and the board of trustees, along with the campus police and many others, on trial. And you can guess what the verdict was, can't you? Off with their heads. Well, that's not exactly how they put it. I doubt they've read Lewis Carroll either. To the guillotines, shouted the protesters, and the videos are up online, thanks to the Gateway Pundit and others. And how bad is it? It's so bad that the president of the university released a statement on Sunday denouncing the encampment and its degeneration into, well, exactly what everybody knew was going to happen. And she said the demonstration, like many around the country, has grown into what can only be classified as an illegal and potentially dangerous occupation of GW property. I think she's more upset now that they're calling for her head. It's also essential, she continued, to highlight that at no point was this encampment lawful. And I gotta ask, since when does the left suddenly care about that? So now it's time for the police to go out and do something, because they're scared. By the way, Martin Armstrong has a piece up on the Burning Platform about the civil unrest funded by the U.S. State Department, Soros, and all the usual suspects, but the press doesn't want to talk about that. And he also notes that here's another thing that you probably could have guessed. Stage actors have been embedded in various U.S. universities to promote the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, pro-communist, anti-U.S. sentiments. Professional agitators, he says, have been utilized countless times throughout periods of civil unrest. We've seen it all before. And while the media has typically and repeatedly denied that there could possibly be anything untoward here, or that Soros and other far-left funders are backing the protests, the evidence is not even hiding in plain sight. CNN, he notes, reported that many of the so-called students arrested at Columbia and the City College of New York had no affiliation with either school, and the NYPD arrested 282 people, and only about half of them were actually students. And of course, if you drill down further, folks, you could argue that that number is grossly exaggerated. Take a look at all the tents, he notes, popping up around major universities as well. They're identical, kind of like the signs. The media claims that students are simply searching for the cheapest tent, which appears to be the two-person Ozark Trail option at Walmart, retailing for around $30. But it seems suspicious that so many rich Ivy League students especially would purchase the same cheap tent coincidentally. A lot of these privileged kids in the Ivy League schools aren't known for sorting by price, and I can't help but think a lot of them wouldn't be caught dead shopping at a Walmart. Isn't that where they think the MAGA people go? So it's more probable, he suggests, if it wasn't already obvious, that some big organization, probably a launderer behind the public-private partners, and guess who's really ultimately paying the bill? Purchased the tents in bulk and distributed them on college campuses. Students are also, and we've known about this, receiving instructional booklets about how to protest and how to conceal your identity. Isn't it convenient that the COVID-era masks are still in style? Well, at least if you want to keep being able to draw that paycheck for the next protest somewhere else in the country. And the pamphlets note, it helps if the entire crowd is doing it. And they're told to bring two sets of clothes and conceal any logos or identifiable items. And just how transparent is it? As reported by Fox News, writes Armstrong, Sami al-Aryan, a known terrorist, once deported, and how bad do you have to be to get deported in this country, folks, advised associates and his wife to camp out along with the college students, the real ones. This man is admittedly associated with the Palestinian Islamic Jihadist group, and he's taken to socialist media to promote the civil unrest across all the American far-left universities, which is, in fact, pretty much all of them. This, says Martin Armstrong, is a clear and real threat to national security, along with so many others, of course. And again, these students, he says, are too naive, and even that's probably putting it mildly, to understand the root cause of these issues. or how truly dangerous the actors are fueling the flames. Even the far-left mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, actually openly says and believes that these events are staged. I know, he said, that there are those who are attempting to say, well, the majority of these people have been students. You don't have to be the majority to influence and co-opt an operation. That's what this is about, said the mayor. We're going to protect our city from those who are attempting to do what is happening globally. There's a movement to radicalize young people, and you'd think he'd know that because he benefits from it. But back to the quote, and I'm not going to wait until it's all done and all of a sudden acknowledge the existence of it, unquote, and wow. He went on to say that the goal of these protests is to create, quote, discord and divisiveness, and for once, Eric Adams actually seems to have gotten it right, notes Armstrong. And where's the Biden Fuhrer? Well, certainly not doing anything productive, but that is no surprise, because usually when there's evil afoot, the people pulling his puppet strings are the ones doing that, too. Biden has already said he would be willing to accept Palestinian refugees, the nastier the better, into the U.S., a move that no country, even in the Arab world, has agreed to do. Tensions are rising, concludes Martin Armstrong. Protests have turned into riots, and violence will continue to escalate if something isn't done to promote, quote, law and order. And guess what, folks? That is not even remotely on the horizon. And meanwhile, the upcoming and obvious summer of rage and terrorism is still a month away. From there, let's turn to the World War III update and what your host thinks is probably the most interesting sequence of events from a whole bunch of different and disparate sources. We'll start with Hal Turner's radio show, who notes that on Monday, they reported the British ambassador had been warned by Russia, and now the French ambassador as well has been explicitly warned about Ukraine. When they came out, says the piece, they were pale, with literally nothing to say to the press. But, says Hal Turner, his intel sources have revealed pretty much what the British were evidently told. The ambassador was warned that the Russian response to any Ukrainian strikes using British weapons on Russian territory could be any British military facilities and equipment, either on the territory of Ukraine or beyond. And it would seem that France got a similar message. And the reaction by Paris, notes the piece, was clear and unambiguous. The British diplomat spent half an hour in the facility and then left without speaking to the press. After that, the French ambassador arrived at the Russian Foreign Ministry, and within minutes of his departure, the French Foreign Ministry in Paris issued a statement confirming that France would not send any military forces to Ukraine.
Just maybe they made him an offer they couldn't refuse.
It looks like the French have surrendered, notes the piece, and Macron actually said the following. We're not at war with Russia or the Russian people, and we have no desire for regime change in Moscow. RT's coverage in a piece headlined, Macron warns about Russian missiles in a defeated Ukraine, focused on a total Russian victory over Ukraine. That's an interesting step, in which the entire country is defeated, and that would be detrimentally said to European and NATO security, as it might allow Moscow to do what they've been trying to do, place missiles on the doorstep of the EU. So they've decided to rule out sending Western troops to Ukraine and instead now advocate a policy of strategic ambiguity towards Russia, arguing that the idea of the approach is to appear strong while not giving too many details. And note that in that earlier speech, he suggested that the French might send troops if the Russians were to break through the front lines, but after getting that offer that he evidently couldn't refuse, they seem to have changed their tune. And finally, it looks like a piece from the UK's Daily Mail may have connected one of the missing dots. Russian President Vladimir Putin, says their piece, has ordered troops based near Ukraine to practice nuclear weapons scenarios. These would be tactical nukes, folks. In a bid to deter adversaries following perceived threats of escalation from the arguably aforementioned Western leaders, military drills in the undisclosed near future, that's the Russian term, coming from the Russian Defense Ministry, will include practice for the preparation and deployment of non-strategic nuclear weapons. And they said these exercises would be carried out, quote, in response to provocative statements and threats by certain Western officials against the Russian Federation. And the Kremlin cited those aforementioned threats to deploy troops in Ukraine. So at least, folks, it looks for now like the British and the French may have gotten the message, said Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov when asked by reporters what had prompted these drills. Quote, this is a completely new round of escalating tensions. It's unprecedented and requires special measures. And another Russian diplomat said from Moscow that they would need to increase their entire missile arsenal as a deterrent following what has been framed as the worst breakdown in relations since 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Said Russian Ambassador at Large Grigory Mashkov to the state RIA news agency, "We are now at the stage of open confrontation, which I hope will not result in a direct armed conflict." And meanwhile, also from Hal Turner, more escalation on the Mideast front of World War III. A ground offensive is underway by Israel against Gaza and Rafah, which by late Monday was being attacked with airstrikes, and tanks and troops had begun moving in. IDF tanks says the piece were spotted less than 200 meters from the Rafah crossing into Egypt, which seems to be a move to cut off the crossing before any of Hamas's leadership tries to flee. And since they're launching the attack from the south, no one in Gaza is able to flee the fighting into Egypt. This, too, is a major escalation, and news reports are noting that Israel gave 1.4 million Palestinians just 12 hours to get out of Rafah, except it looks like they're going to have difficulty figuring out where to go. Speaking of which, if the regime gets its way, Americans may have a similar difficulty. Front Page magazine reports that the Biden-Fuhrer regime and the Saudis are evidently cooking up a new deal. Details, of course, will probably not come out until it's too late, but under the terms of the agreement as leaked, the Saudis will get nuclear capability, as well as defense guarantees, and a terrorist state inside Israel. And what will the United States get? Well, you can guess, folks, temporarily lower gasoline prices. And if you have any reason to think that might hit somewhere in the time frame of October or so, you're probably on the right page. Says the coverage, the Saudis aren't offering to boost oil production and bring down prices as a favor to America, but specifically to the Biden-Fuhrer and the puppeteers pulling his strings, and it's an election quid pro quo that may end up costing who knows how many Americans, millions of them almost certainly, their lives. And as you're probably aware, after having drained the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in order to rig the midterms, Biden has been unable to refill it, as if he had any desire to anyway. It's a fossil fuel, don't you know? Because his environmentalist allies and puppet masters have kept prices high. And Saudi Arabia has rejected requests to lower oil prices for anything short of assistance in building their own nuclear program. And as we've seen from the left, folks, they don't seem to have any problem subsidizing exactly that if it's the right kind of terrorists that are crossing their palms with, well, black gold. And while we're on the subject of World War III and the woke military that doesn't have the ability to fight it, this one's interesting, courtesy of the IndependentSentinel.com and former Navy SEAL and former U.S. Representative Scott Taylor, who just posted a list of four classes that are currently being taught at West Point, which seem to be a deliberate effort, he notes, to destroy our military. Gee, do you think? One class at a time. And if the Chinese Communist Party isn't funding this, they're probably laughing about it and wishing they'd thought of it, but I bet they did. Here are the classes. Number one, quote, deconstructing patriotism, exploring postmodernism, and U.S. Army recruitment amidst the lack of a national narrative. Oh, don't kid yourself, folks. There's a national narrative, all right. It's just about destroying a once free country. Then there's this one, uniformed perspectives, the evolution of cross-dressing in the military, and gender norms. Oh, that sounds really educational, doesn't it, for a regime that's engaged in perpetual warfare. Then there's this, do my leaders get me? Unpacking the importance of representation in the military. And I'm betting, folks, the real problem with that sentence is the word leaders. Finally, harder rights, an approach to espoused values and behavior inconsistency, says the piece. This looks like they intend to distort patriotism into perversion, as well as anti-American woke ideology. And given that these are the same blithering morons that are pushing World War III, you got to figure the non-existent but open southern border may just end up being a harbinger of even more humiliation and mass death yet to come. There's been so much that's come out of late about the traitorous and absolutely anti-rule of law, well, crap, being perpetrated by those who are trying to destroy what's left of the Constitutional Republic, and people like Jack Smith in particular are right at the top of that fetid heap. I've got a Gateway Pundit piece here entitled Exclusive. Top attorney Thor Hearn has offered analysis and a prediction about what the Supreme Court might do on their decision concerning Trump v. United States and the presidential immunity case. And this one also includes a scathing rebuke of that so-called special counsel and truly satanic scumbag, Jack Smith, who, as you probably know, has been caught in a conspiracy to destroy the actually elected president, manipulate evidence, and, well, pretty much you name it. Once upon a time, this would have been called obstruction of justice, but we haven't had any justice to obstruct for so long, it no longer seems to matter anymore. As we've previously reported, notes Jim Hoff for the Gateway Pundit, former Attorney General John Ashcroft and a group called the Constitutional Coalition filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court on the question of presidential immunity, and the case concerns whether a subsequent president may criminally prosecute their predecessor, and especially if they are their current political rival, for official acts that the previous president actually took while legitimately in office. This amicus brief, or friend of the court, was filed back in early April to defend the constitutional principle that a president, especially a real one, as the nation's chief executive, must have immunity from criminal prosecution for official actions that the president takes. Otherwise, the, as we've now seen, very well justified fear of a subsequent political rival bringing criminal persecution against that president will impair anyone who actually occupies that office from making decisions necessary in his best judgment to protect the national interest and discharge the duties of the office of chief executive. That is, presuming we had an individual in that office that A, had a brain, and B, gave a damn about the people of this constitutional republic. Obviously, how this Supreme Court decides the case will affect the separation of powers between the least once three separate branches of our government and determine how future presidents fulfill or not their duty as chief executive. The brief provides an historical context for the Supreme Court to consider, and it's not even hyperbole, says the piece, to suggest that this U.S. v. Trump case is of a constitutional magnitude equivalent to the infamous, I would note, Chief Justice John Marshall's decision in Marbury v. Madison. The oral arguments, as you may be aware, took place in the Supreme Court on April 25th, and a decision is expected before Independence Day, if we still have one this year. Attorney Thor Hearn is outside counsel for the Constitutional Coalition, and he provided an analysis of the Trump v. United States oral arguments, which turned out to be kind of a blistering rebuke of the Biden Fuhrer and their own ham-handed defense of their own actions to take down their political opposition via what's properly called lawfare. He began with an observation that every justice understood that this Supreme Court decision truly will be a landmark case, and it transcends the immediate issue of President Trump himself and this upcoming presidential election. Given this, he said, I was somewhat surprised by the quality, to put it mildly, of Special Counsel Jack Smith's work. He prefaced it by noting that during his 30-year career, he's had the opportunity to argue before the Supreme Court and represented hundreds of amici parties, including the leadership of the United States House and Senate in matters before the court. And most of the time, the work coming out of the Solicitor General's office and the counsel for them is of a very high quality. Well, that is, he said, until I read Jack Smith's briefs, and they were, to put it mildly, folks, not of the high quality that the Solicitor General normally writes. And he said, I even found this surprising, and then I realized they were not from the Solicitor General's office, but were an in-house product of Jack Smith's so-called special counsel team. You'd have thought they could have done better. He also offers a prediction for the outcome of the case. Recognizing, he said, it's a bit like trying to predict the path of a hurricane. That is, folks, unless you rig that path up front. I can't help but note. Anyway, he says, I expect Chief Justice John Roberts will author the majority opinion that overturns the D.C. Circuit's categorical holding that the president has no immunity from criminal prosecution for any official act. I anticipate, he continues, the court will remand the case to the district court for a fuller record of what specific official acts, as opposed to private acts, are the basis of Jack Smith's indictment. The remand will direct the district court to develop the specific facts and allegations underlying Jack Smith's indictment. And that'll be interesting because arguably there aren't any, at least not any that may not have been planted. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Barrett did not seem inclined to favor a blanket rule that the president's absolutely immune from criminal prosecution for every official act that he takes while in office. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Barrett seem inclined to develop a more limited doctrine of immunity, addressing the distinction between official acts, like directing a drone strike that killed American citizens, and private acts that the president might engage in pursuit of his own private interest. You know, like getting a blowjob from that infamous woman in the blue dress under the Resolute desk. And he notes Clinton's act with Monica Lewinsky wasn't an official act, even though he arguably engaged in the act in the Oval Office. And that goes for his subsequent denials of inappropriate conduct at official press conferences also held in the White House. Continuing, though, he says Justices Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Alito appeared favorable to a broad rule recognizing presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts. I anticipate, he added, that they will join the Chief Justice and Justice Barrett's opinion reversing the D.C. Circuit. Meanwhile, Justices Alito, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Thomas also appeared to be sympathetic to the argument made in our amicus brief about bringing a criminal prosecution against the president for an official act requiring the president to first be impeached and convicted by the House and the Senate. As you might observe, folks, the Constitution, back when we had one, used to require. Justice Thomas, he said, as he is wont to do, focused on the constitutional source of presidential immunity and wanted to have a fuller sense of the constitutional text and history underlying the immunity doctrine. Justice Thomas, he said, is a celebrated textualist and originalist who looks to the words of the Constitution or a statute that is the subject of the dispute so that the court may faithfully interpret and apply the Constitution or statute as the drafters intended. What a concept. This, he said, is similar to the philosophy of the late Justice Scalia and what he brought to the court. I anticipate Justice Thomas will embrace the principle of presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts, but, he said, I anticipate Justice Thomas will write a separate opinion explaining the historical context and constitutional text underlying this doctrine. And I guess, folks, while that sounds reasonable, we'll see whether or not the court is as well. And finally today, I'm going to do something I don't end up doing very often, but there was some late news that didn't make it into the original live airing. It will be in the podcast. Some of it we could see coming. Some of it is obviously still going to need to be spun by the waste stream before they finally decide how to handle it. But even the Daily Mail had to come out with a story today and admit that the FBI has been accused, do you think, of altering or manipulating the so-called classified documents that were planted or found at Mar-a-Lago. We've known it was a trap or a setup. To call it a double standard is a gross understatement. And we've known that it's a persecution and a sham trial rather than an actual court of law. But by Tuesday afternoon, things were starting to hit the fan. House Republicans, says the Daily Mail story, are investigating whether or not Donald Trump's classified documents investigation was tainted, gee, do you think, following revelations that the FBI, and here's a shocker, folks, tampered with evidence. And special scumbag, or counsel, Jack Smith and his team overseeing the persecution have been forced to admit that the boxes of files recovered from that raid at Trump's Mar-a-Lago home were altered and or manipulated. And basically, they lied to the court, the Congress, and the American people. And then a letter obtained by the Daily Mail to the Department of Justice, House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan of Ohio said he had grave concerns about the department's, quote, commitment to impartial judgment. Trump's legal team has long been asking for recusals of all these different scumbags for all kinds of obvious reasons, and they've asked for dismissals as well. And while that didn't happen, Judge Eileen Cannon on Tuesday afternoon indefinitely postponed Jack Smith's sham show trial after he admitted to being guilty of worse crimes than Trump is being pilloried for, and she vacated the May 20th trial date. So you know there are other machinations coming. Again, perhaps understating the case, Jordan's letter to the DOJ alluded to a pattern of, quote, violating ethical norms in their persecution of Donald Trump. And finally, there's this. Remember the scumbag from Atlanta and her paid gigolo? Judicial Watch has now asked the Superior Court of Fulton County, Georgia, to declare a default judgment against Fannie Willis after she refused to respond to their lawsuit related to communications she had with the aforementioned scumbag Jack Smith and the sham January 6th committee. Can you catch a general stench here, folks? Jim Jordan's asking for those documents, too. What do you bet they'll end up classified and probably sitting in some garage next to a senile presidential imposter's Corvette? Meanwhile, though, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton, I think this is the first time in Judicial Watch's 30-year history that a government official failed to answer an open records lawsuit in court, he said, which further shows Ms. Willis has something to hide, gee, do you think, about her collusion with the Biden-Fuhrer regime and Nancy Pelosi's Congress on her unprecedented and compromised Get Trump prosecution. And if you wonder how the waste stream is going to keep public attention off of all of this, well, the answer is all over the headlines. Stormy Daniels testified in one of those cases, and the testimony was so lurid, it almost shocked even that whore in the black robe. The Daily Mail said she trotted out all of her porn star acting skills. But the judge really drew the line when it came to talking about penis specifics. Good grief, folks. This judicial system is the laughingstock of the world. But you know it's about making sure people don't pay attention to what should be the real headlines. What does all this really tell you? Well, if you think things are getting ugly, you ain't seen nothing yet. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.